Well, she heads up the website earthfiles.com. She's our investigative reporter, and every month she goes all over the place for moments of high strangeness. This time, it's taken her to the United Kingdom. Let's pull in Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, how are you?
George, you will not believe this. I am looking at a brand new digital series of images from a brand new formation this morning. And with me are our originally intended guest, Andrew Perka, who is a taxi driver from Cheltenham, about an hour from where we are sitting in Wiltshire, with his colleague, Paul Jones. And they are going to talk to us about a phenomenal piece of video that they got that was of a what appears to be some kind of an aerial craft in the sky. But he now has a live report this morning on the way to come and do coast of three, at least, new formations. And I'm going to put on the line Andrew Perka from Cheltenham to give us a firsthand breaking news report. And the photos I have just looked at, George, on his camera, they are clean and pristine and beautiful. And it rained hard here most of yesterday. Mud everywhere. He has mud on the bottom of his trousers, and you're still looking at beautiful circles. Here is Andrew Perka from Cheltenham.
All right, take it away.
Hello, George.
Hi, Andrew. Good to have you with us.
No problem. Yeah, it's quite an exciting morning. It's we were driving in, obviously, to be on a show, and quite a nice sunny morning. And of course, we spotted the first formation, and we were quite excited about this. Lovely and clean, beautifully designed. It's the actual corn is nice and crisp to the foot at the same time. And of course, my colleague reports is, well, maybe there's another one. And of course, we drove up the road and literally about half a mile further down, and there it is. There's another one. And we managed to take a couple of snaps. And of course, we were rushing towards the show, so we couldn't go into this one. And then literally as we approached Avery, yet another one. So it's and we've got a hat trick this morning. So incredibly fascinating, incredibly interesting what obviously happened last night. So it's definitely something to look forward to later on when we finish the show and we need to pop back in there. Just pass it back to Linda. Then.
Super. Thanks, Andrew.
And George, what they're going to try to do, we're now going to go into their silver craft sighting. And at the commercial break, they're going to go to the one at Avebury that they haven't been into yet. And if they can get back in time in our last half hour, they're going to try to give us a live report. And it depends upon whether they encounter an angry farmer or whatever conditions, but we're going to try.
And set the stage for us, Linda. What's going on out there?
Well,
and what got you up there?
This has been a season of some of the most extraordinary oilseed rape formations that, contrary to some of the absolutely mindless and groundless headlines that circulate on the internet that 80% or 100% of crop formations are man-made, in the face of facts and people who know what they're talking about, the spring season here was without doubt no human could have worked in oilseed rape and made the formations they did. And then with Paul and Andrew, it was June 14th, and they had gone trying to see the formation, which was the Aztec Bird Formation near Barbary Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmer was angry and did not want anybody confronted them, would not let them go into the formation. So they are turning their truck around, and they're going back down a hill from Barbary Castle. And Paul is the one who has videotape on tripod. Andrew is the one who has the handheld that we're going to get into here in a minute. And I would like to have Andrew start by describing what it was that brought their attention to something really quite strange that then led their attention to this other thing in the sky.
All
here
right.
Is Andrew again.
All right, very good.
Yes, hi, George. Yes, first of all, what I'd like to mention is actually the perfection in the timing of this event. If you imagine English country roads with hedges and trees blocking the view of surrounding fields, you can't see a great deal. So as we drove down from Barbary Castle, there was a gap in the hedgerow, approximately 10 foot or so, so okay. It was very minimal. Our approximate speed was about 30 miles an hour, so we're really coming down quite slowly. As we approach this gap, it is at this point that I noticed something very, very big and black swirling extremely fast. It was almost like watching something in an animated motion. My point here is that what followed later would have been impossible to spot from a distance while driving. So this huge black swirling object, I feel, was intentional, so we would stop and look. So now we feel this was almost like an invitation to be filmed. As I said, the whole timing of this was absolute perfection. I did an emergency stop in the middle of the road, and we thought that we were actually seeing a crop circle being made.
Jeez.
We jumped at the car very, very fast, just simply like Starsky and Hutch, and grabbed the binoculars. And it is at this point, then Paul basically kind of confirmed. I first thought it was a helicopter, but then Paul looked again. And then I'll pass you on to Paul, and Paul can sort of continue on the story.
Okay.
Hi, George.
Hi, Paul. Fascinating. My gosh.
Yeah, we stopped the car, and Andrew looked through the binoculars, and he thought there was a helicopter coming over the rise. And he passed the binoculars to me, and I had a look. And I couldn't believe it. To me, it looked like a silver disc. So with that, I said to Andrew, it's definitely not a helicopter. So we went to the back of the vehicle and went from there.
And, Paul, this issue, because I've looked at all of your video, I've watched all of it, and the thing that's intriguing to me is that seemed to be a white light, not a glint of sun, because it has an intensity that is far brighter than you would associate with a light. At that moment, when you're seeing that for the first time, could you see any spinning, which is so strange because that light seems stationary and yet the object seems to move?
Yes, I could see some sort of slight movement going on there, but I wasn't 100% sure. So I got the JVC camera out and went from there.
Now, George and Coast audience, what happened is Paul has his good professional video camera mounted on a tripod in a position, and he starts rolling and has 10 minutes in a tripod good video of an object that I'm now going to turn back to Andrew, who can describe, because he's the one who is moving around. Paul is staying in a position and gets essentially the best video, but it is Andrew who is moving out in the field with his handheld camera, and now we're going to hear Andrew's description of what he's seeing.
This is just riveting. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, yes, this is obviously quite an interesting time. What basically happened is that there was basically a point when the object disappeared, and at this point we realized that our batteries were running quite low. So I was frantically phoning everybody, including Charles Mallett, who's the owner of Silent Circle in Wiltshire. And basically what Charles suggested, he says, why don't you go and run into the field? And at this particular point, I did exactly that, leaving Paul behind on a hill so Paul could continue filming. I literally then jumped in the car and drove to this location. And I'm having a three-way conversation here between Paul and myself and Charles. So I run into the field, sort of looking for this object and a possible crop circle formation. So basically, what happens at that point, I don't realize, I wasn't aware that the actual craft had risen again. So Paul phones me. Paul calls me on the cell phone. And he said, have you realized you just walked past it? And this I found quite extraordinary, as I literally could not see the craft from that point. So what Paul did, Paul guided me back towards where the craft was. And he literally, the minute I got it, so he could see me in the actual camera in his viewfinder. And he guided me to that point, and he said, right, basically stop. And I stopped right there in the middle of the craft. And I got my camcorder, my own personal camcorder, pointing into that direction. And there's nothing, there's absolutely nothing visible on my camcorder. But yet, the craft is visible on Paul's viewfinder further up the hill. And Paul basically says to me at that particular point, he says, right, you're in front of it. He says, raise your hand, he said, raise your hand. So, and the minute I raised my hand, there was almost like an electrical-type buzz going, shooting down my arm. And at that particular point, I really did think I actually touched the craft. So it was quite an extraordinary event. It was just amazing to feel this. And afterwards, and I was watching, when I actually reviewed the video myself, I was completely astounded myself to what I was viewing. After that, this particular event, I was running around the field hoping to find a crop circle. Sadly, there wasn't one. But then after that, I returned back to Paul, and the craft slowly but surely started to disappear. I'll just pass it back to Linda.
And Paul, what exactly at that point did you see? Anything about this craft that is suspended? And I would like George and the Coast audience to realize that you can go to my news website, earthfiles.com, and you can see a series of images that Paul and Andrew have provided that show how this craft is in the sky and how it goes down below the hill. The videotape is extraordinary, but they have a contractual agreement with a film company to release this, and that's why we don't have a clip of that video, and I understand that. But the images themselves and still are extremely impressive. And what is, to me, interesting, Paul, is that you're still there at your tripod. And would you describe what you were seeing that you thought was motion?
What I could see basically was a silver disc in the distance through my viewfinder. I could see movement. I'm not sure exactly what it was doing, but it seemed very, maybe slight motion, spinning, maybe slightly spinning.
And what was your reaction or your impression of why that light, once it rotated into the position with the light to your left, the light stays there. Even if it's spinning, that light never changes, did it?
Yeah, it could have possibly been a reflection from the sun on the craft, but it definitely looked silver. So.
But even if it were spinning, you would think that you would see a change in that light. It was almost as if the light itself had its own space in relationship to whatever that craft was.
Yeah, it's possible, yeah.
And, George, this is the only video that I have ever seen in crop circle country where something that you would say clearly on nearly a half hour of sustained running videotape on a tripod can be seen for long time segments, 10 minutes and 15 minutes, in visible light videotape.
That's huge, too, because we've never had anything like this to look at, have we?
No, absolutely not. And I think that Andrew and Paul have something really special here. And I'm hoping that everything is going to go forward well with the release of all of this in a film so that everybody can eventually see this as the video that I have seen. It's quite impressive. And another thing, Charles Mallett at the Silent Circle Research Center in Compton Bassett received two emails from residents who also saw what they describe as UFOs in the sky at almost exactly the same time that night of June 14th in the Barbary Castle region, exactly where Paul and Andrew were. One was a sighting around 8 p.m. Remember, they were videotaping this craft at 8:30. Mm-hmm. And it says that some people who had gone to visit a new formation at Wayland Smithy on that evening saw, quote, two thin black UFOs on the eastern horizon. At the time, I said that I thought they were the classic triangle shape. And I'll pause here for a second to say that when you study their video in absolutely running detail without stop, you get the impression that the object almost has a trapezoid, very odd shape, that it's not completely and totally circular, but you're not sure because of this bright light. And they continue, the classic triangle shape, but I was seeing them edge on and traveling toward us east to west. So they appeared as thin black shapes with a slight bulge in the middle. I estimate they were a long way off when I saw them, at least maybe 5 miles, but they were still large, much wider than an airplane or the hot air balloon that we had seen earlier that day, and they were very black against the sunny blue sky. Another witness at 8:20 p.m., which is very close to when Paul and Andrew were videotaping, said that after for about 2 minutes, an orb seemed to come and then disappear, and they kept staring at the sky, and the orb would reappear again as if it were almost playing cat and mouse with them. Here I am, here I'm not, here I am. They watched it for several minutes, and then the orb disappeared, and shortly after, in the same place that the orb disappeared, a small black object emerged from a cloud that they had noticed. And now this object is coming from the cloud, and George, it looked to them like an airplane, but an odd airplane that was traveling slowly and close enough that they should have heard sound, and they did not hear any sound. These are all anomalies that were occurring in the Barbary Castle area within 8 to 8:30 p.m. on June 14th. And one of the things about this is going back to the mid-80s, I remember very distinctly a conversation that I had with a man who had worked for government intel in the United States, and he told me that they had come to the conclusion that they were dealing with some sort of non-human intelligence, and that it had a technology that could deflect photons. And he put it this way: we think that you could have a crowd of 100 people in a park, and they could deflect photons so that images of a craft or an entity would not reach the retinas of 99 people, and one person would see a craft, and nobody else could. In this case, that's what's remarkable. The videotape is long and sustained of a silver disc, and yet Paul can see it through his eyes, through his camera. Andrew is out trying to find it, and he can't see anything, and Paul is provoked to call him on a cell phone and try to guide him. And Andrew could never see the craft with his retina. Something very peculiar was blocking Andrew's ability to see it while Paul was able to film and videotape nearly a half hour of sustained and clear footage.
Now, Linda, is this ongoing, or does this episode seem to be over at least for now?
Well, very interesting question right now. Of the three patterns that they have discovered this morning, this would be, we're talking about, a month and a half later, but we've often wondered about time delays when people have seen anomalies and when patterns might show up in those areas. I'd ask him if where the craft had gone down in the video or in the landscape, it would be line of sight between Barbary Castle and Swindon and the new Hackpen formation this morning would be in that general direction. Would something have occurred having to do with this craft on June 14th that might provoke on July 31st here, July 30th in the U.S., this formation? See, none of us know except that we are dealing with the highest strangeness here. And if this program tonight can get across to the North American audience that whatever they are hearing from complete misinforming people about the crop formations in England being all man-made, it's not true. We are dealing with huge anomalies. And when you realize it was raining so hard yesterday that it sounded like windows would break, and there is mud and water in the streets, and they walk into a formation and show me as they came in digital images fresh within the last half hour of circles that are completely clean and pristine.
Stay with us. Linda Moulton Howe, live from the United Kingdom with some special reports of high strangeness in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, this light anomaly picture that you sent us at this crop circle site is also bizarre, isn't it?
It is truly, and it is the slow motion of an event that Winston Keach, who is a Yorkshire engineer, he now specializes in developing renewable energy processes. He comes from a highly technical engineering background, and he is the one who is has the resources to invest in four very expensive infrared cameras. I'll give you the specs here in a minute, but I'd like you and the audience to understand the timeline here. With Andrew and Paul, we were at June 14th, more than a month ago, at Barbary Castle. And now we're going to move forward in time a month from that event to July 14th, same date, but in July, in the Eastfield. And this is the night, or the early morning hours, before maybe a lot of the audience has seen that very tightly woven basket weave circle with the arc coming out of each end.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't there. That was not there when Winston Keach set up his, they are four, I'm going to give this to you, four cameras that are a 0.0002 lux made by Samsung in infrared with 570 line resolution on closed circuit TV, and they're mounted, of all four cameras, two per T-bar on poles in front of his van. That's his standard operation. And he had also, he had some fixed digital equipment, because you've got to have angles on things in order to gauge the distance, the heights, make comparisons in the visible color world on still digital frames with what you get on infrared in order to make a comparison to identify which images suddenly show up that are only in infrared. That is extremely important, to have those comparisons between the heat world of infrared and the visible world. So he had started his cameras operating a little after midnight on July 14th, knew there's nothing in the Eastfield. They can see that. At 12:24 a.m., or on July 14th, Eastfield, two fast, rapid light flashes begin at 12:24 a.m., followed by two large dark spots that move around in the wheat and appear to be later joined by smaller gray spots, all moving until 1:44 a.m. That's an hour and 20 minutes of anomalies on infrared running without break, and that it is exactly in the spot in the Eastfield where in the morning, after sunup, and after thick fog had cleared from that end of the field. They never saw this formation, George. That's what's so ironic.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Yeah.
They never saw it. And here it is. And at earthfiles.com, I have tried with still images to show how you can go and line up. You can look at the tram lines in infrared. You can look at the background, and you can see in a color image that Charles Mallett went the next day, set up exactly where Wynn had his poles and the cameras, and he took a color daylight reality check, and you can compare the tram lines, and you're looking at the formation that then in the color field, and you can go back and you can look, and I have an RGB enhanced image at Earth Files that was taken in the during those night during the, all the strange infrared anomalies, because Winston wanted to see, well, what are these dark things doing? That the motion, that what has happened here? And he took an RGB enhanced just to see if there was a pattern. And there was not during that hour and 20 minutes, and there was not until you get to what he thinks, Winston Keach thinks, that at 1:45 a.m., the first line, that's what they call it in infrared, might have been in the east field 40 minutes. If they ended at 1:44, that 1 minute later, there might have been a first shadow line, but it would not have been the whole pattern. And this gets into the issue. How are these patterns made? Why are there sometimes delays? Why sometimes do they seem to come rapidly? Well, here on Coast to talk about this highly strange infrared video and these extraordinary woven wheat layers that he was into that morning is Charles Mallett, director of the Silent Circle Research Center in Compton Bassett. Now, Winston Keach wanted to be here, and would have been here. But, George, we are all surrounded by swine flu hitting people right and left. I hope before I leave that I will not get it, but if I do, I do. It is just raging in England, and Winston is sick with this flu. He has two friends also who have been confirmed by lab tests of having swine flu. And Charles has studied all of Winston Keach's full video that go on for hours. And I want to ask him a question that intrigued me when I first saw Winston Keach's videotape. And Charles has been in the formations and studying them now for 12 years. And Charles, I'm wondering, have you ever seen any infrared video that has anything on the infrared video that even resembles what Winston Keach got in the Eastfield July 14?
No, I have not. Nothing specifically like that. Obviously, there's surveillance work done each summer here, and infrared is often used because there are things happening in the infrared spectrum that we often do not see in the visible light. However, what Winston Keach appears to have filmed that night, I would consider unprecedented in the history of the crop circles phenomenon. I have never seen something like that before. I know Winston Keach relatively well. I've followed his work over the years in surveillance. He comes to Wiltshire each summer and looks at this land in a very intelligent way using very advanced technologies. He's a highly credible witness. So when he calls me up and saying, I've got something very strange, Charles, and you need to look at this, I had a look and I showed it to experts in the field, and they were intrigued by what was happening in the infrared, especially because the other technologies he was using were unable to perceive what was happening there. So we do have bright flashes of light in the field that are very, very clearly visible in the infrared, and the subsequent disappearance of those lights and the appearance of what appear to be two black somethings, quite large relative to the later, smaller, grayish shapes that seem to be moving in the area where the formation was later found. So we absolutely do have something in the field which we cannot explain at this time, filmed in the infrared. Linda?
And Charles, you know, it's very easy for you, me, Winston, all of us, to jump to the conclusion that whatever the light was, it provoked, I'm going to use the word, provoked the release of the dark things, because we don't know what they are. It was very rapid. You see the light, George, on the video. And to remember that you could have been standing there with binoculars and you would not have seen this bright, bright double flash of light. That is eerie to contemplate right there. Sure. And how much is happening around us in infrared that our retinas are not seeing. But on that videotape, immediately after this bright double flash, these dark, whatever they are there, and they begin to move. And if I understand from Wynn's time, he has motion that you've studied. It goes on for an hour and 20 minutes?
That's correct. It's approximately activity after the two flashes of light that are very clearly apparent in the film, in the infrared. Kind of reminded me of the way in the movie segment for Terminator, I know it's a bit quirky, but there's a flash of light and it's just there, and that's kind of what happened effectively. So the activity with these two black shapes moving around for approximately 1 hour and a half, is very unusual indeed, and the formation seems to have appeared sometime very soon after that. It's pretty unusual in so far as the shapes appear to be solid that are showing just after the light, but at the same time, this is pretty grainy. The cameras were positioned several hundred meters from the formation, and it was a very, very dark night, so the ambient lighting was minimal. So these are grainy images, but there is absolutely something there which is anomalous, according to my understanding, according to the understanding of experts in the field, so to speak. So at this time, we have something that we really need to attempt to understand with a further study. Linda?
And you got into the formation that Winston, I think, called you, and you headed out to the Eastfield. So you were in there fresh. And for listeners who may not have been in crop formations, for those of us who have been in hundreds, when you look at a basket weave like this one in the East Field, George, it is extraordinary. This kind of tight weave has happened only perhaps in one small patch of a field in Pennsylvania a few years back. And back in 1999, there was what was called the woven basket that I was there with half a dozen people, and we got to see some of it, but the farmer came and completely obliterated
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he was upset, wasn't he?
Oh, he chased us out. So this makes this East Field event really extraordinary in all the annals of crop formation. And now, since Charles was in there, and he's a very experienced eye and mind in crop formations, I'd like him to give us now his firsthand impressions of getting into it the very first minutes in the East Field.
Okay.
So I actually went to that formation around about 10 a.m. on day one. Winston actually left the field. He finished filming at 4:57 a.m. and left the field soon afterwards after a bank of fog came down over that end of the field, so the cameras were no longer able to penetrate the field. It was kind of getting light, but it was imperceptible at that time. The formation was first physically seen from a nearby roadway at around about 5 a.m. by Andrew Perker, who you were talking with just a bit earlier. I entered the formation around about 10 a.m. Unfortunately, it had a fair number of... there's a lot of tourists in southern England looking at crop circles this time of year for very good reasons. So the formation had been walked on, and we approach a formation in a clear and objective way. It's like we approach it as a crime scene. We're looking for physical evidence of something anomalous there, or otherwise, whatever the case may be. There had been visitors there, and it was a relatively small formation, so we had to take that into account when doing our examination. However, we did get into the formation, and, 10 o'clock, which is relatively early. We did examine areas where it was most likely where people hadn't walked, was all the peripheral areas of the mesh weave of the formation. We did not find typical kinds of damage that you would see if the thing had been smashed down by a bunch of people for some kind of joke. The weaving on the ground within the formation is pretty unusual. As Linda said, that's kind of happened pretty much once in southern England with a couple of similar things around the world, but generally speaking, that was considered unprecedented in the way that formation was woven down. Very tight, very sharp weave over a pretty large 160 feet diameter, maybe circular area. And when viewed from above, it's actually a pretty sophisticated weave. It's a kind of a basket weave which is sectioned into four quarters, almost like some kind of interference pattern. For that to appear by the hand of physical, everyday people in a short space in the pitch dark, I would consider not viable.
And George and Coast audience, keep in mind that Winston Keach and his infrared cameras showed there was nothing there in that East Field by 1:44 a.m. There was nothing there, and yet by 1:45, Winston thinks he has the first line of something in the field, and then we have the 5 a.m. report. All you have to do is look at that pattern and realize that between 1:45 a.m. and 5, there are no humans in the world that could have made that pattern, right? And we had infrared that was running, and if there had been people, that would have been one thing. Instead, we have all of these anomalies moving. And one more very important piece that ties to that video that I sent to Lex to put up at the coast site. It was 1 week before, on July 7th, Winston Keach was running his infrared video cameras, again, very near Eastfield at the bottom of Knapp Hill. And it was 3:24 a.m. And he gets another highly strange moving shadow first. If you watch all the video, you see a trail that looks like a shadow that suddenly lights up in two phases. And Winston made a slow motion video that I could share with Coast and have at Earth Files, along with some other videos that he made of this. And the light seemed to provoke And I'm just going to say, because I don't know what else, it almost looks like you're looking at legs that begin to move, and then the whole thing slowly dissipates in the air. And then, this is what Winston emailed me. He said the height is estimated against the height of the grass surrounding the entity and the known one-meter height of the distant fence post in the frame, with a known distance exceeding three times that of the entity to camera, and later compared against the size of rabbits that hop along the same piece of hillside an hour later in his infrared videotape. He says the tiny entity is just over two rabbits tall. So we're talking about something in scale to the environment that is small and yet seems to have something of a, I'm just going to say, perhaps a small humanoid shape that is provoked almost as if it is released by these very bright flashes on infrared. And what it raised in my own mind was, as you watch it dissipate, you're left with the distinct feeling that whatever this was, the light, like the July 14th release of whatever the dark things are, that the light releases, if we can use that verb, whatever this small entity is that clearly seems to start moving on what appears perhaps to be legs, and just before your eyes on infrared, not your retina, dissipates in the air, leaving me wondering, well, then, whatever has been released that can dissipate, is it still moving in the fields and none of us can see it with our eyes?
Linda, this is just incredible. And earlier you had said, you know, 80 to 90% you believe could be real. You know, even if 1% was real, that explains the whole situation is very, very bizarre.
Oh, well, we know that the spring formations in England in oilseed rape, that difficult flowering, very thick, viney stuff, no human made those patterns. And we're talking now when we get into barley and wheat, it's easier for the hoaxers and those that deliberately, for some reason, want to muddy the waters around the true phenomenon that they can do this. And what I'm trying to do is contradict what I can't believe has been going on the internet with headlines, even with 100% was in a headline before I left Albuquerque for England, that said 100% of the English crop formations were man-made. That is preposterous. And here is Charles for one last comment before the break.
We've got the break. We'll have to do it next hour. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got Linda Moulton Howe. Let's go back to her in the United Kingdom. There you are. Set the scene for us, by the way. Linda, where are you now?
I am sitting at a window that is looking out on one of those magical English gardens in which it looks like there are a thousand different plants. Pink flowers that look like orchids are growing up. You can see bees and bumblebees. And it reminds me of being a kid and reading English novels in which there are always gardens with gates that you would go through, like into a secret garden. And that's exactly what this yard is like at Charles Mallett's house. We're in Yatesbury, which is very close to Colne and Shurhill, and up the road is Avebury and Silbury Hill. So I'm right in the heart of what has been known as Crop Formation Central and the Vale of Pewsey. And I'm going to start this morning with my own first, I thought, joyful and wonderful introduction into England upon landing at Heathrow. And then, and in a few minutes, I'm going to have firsthand eyewitness from a cameraman who was the first to go into that amazing, what some people call Quetzalcoatl headdress,
yep,
across the road from Silbury Hill. So you're now into the world of two people, myself and cameraman Ryan O'Hara,
mm-hmm,
who he was there. I'm now arriving at Heathrow, and it was raining. I get into my rental car and it is raining.
You mean you're driving yourself around out there?
Oh, I always have, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you switch over to the wrong side of the road and the wrong side of the car. But I actually find it kind of fun. I enjoy it. And I'm heading down the M4 and I go to my dear friend's place on the Kennett Canal where they have a boat, and I stayed there for a couple of nights before moving to Charles, and I learned from Charles Mallett that that Friday morning, my flight landed midday, that morning that the amazing 12-armed Ogborn St. George pattern was reported, also near Barbary Castle. So Jill Nicholas, my dear friend, and I headed off, and I have been with people struggling to find formations in the past. I have never encountered anything like this one. We found so many people, do you know where this new formation is? And no one could figure it out, could not find it. And eventually some people from Norway came and said, follow us. And we went running, literally running after the Norwegians. And it was a 2-mile trek just to get to a point on a ridgeway where we could see this incredible 12-armed beaded with what appear to be Mayan symbols out in the wheat, still far away. We've walked 2 miles. And where we get to the point where we can finally see this formation for the first time, where are we? We are at the top of a very steep sheep pasture. There are 100 or more sheep in front of us. And as we start down that hill, the sheep start moving. But we had to go a long way to get down to the bottom of the hill. Now we're at the edge of the wheat field. You have to go several hundred more feet in the wheat before you can get to this pattern that I estimate is probably 200 feet in diameter with the 12 arms around the center. And this morning I wanted to share some of the first discoveries that make this pattern not only a unique pattern in the history of patterns in crop formations, 12 arms with what appear to be clearly Mayan symbols, but as I walked in, and you're looking at the surface lay, and you start looking for breaks or cracks or anything that seems artificial, I began to realize that if I lifted up the surface wheat, that, George, I would be looking at a 90-degree, perfect, neat. We're not talking about something haphazard. We're talking about something that is almost woven tightly vertically, like we just talked about the weave in the basket in Eastfield. This is vertical. I began getting down on my hands and knees and trying to find out how many 90-degree crosshatches and finding 45-degree neatly laid layers amid the 90 degrees, and I was finding many 5 layers deep, some 7 layers deep, and one woman said that she counted 12 layers of crisscrossing layers below the surface that you could walk on and never realize what was underneath. This is a remarkable construction, and when you realize that there are 48 small circles, and every single circle in that pattern appeared to be completely different. Imagine something constructing 48 small circles when you look at that pattern
in
the air.
And over what kind of period of time do you think this thing just formed?
Well, from the biophysical work of W.C. Levengood, I remember working with him in 1994. And even on the basis of what he was finding under the microscope that far back, he told me one day, he said, Linda, I am convinced that we are dealing with a phenomenon that can act in seconds. And he wasn't kidding, and here's the reason why. If you have, like in Ogborn, St. George, if you have parts of formations that are raised up above others, say 7 layers, and you've got inches between one a flatter part of the floor, lower part of the floor, I'm talking about the lay, the floor, and you've got other parts that are coming up because they've literally been constructed some way, If you are dealing with what he thinks is a spinning plasma vortex that has microwave energy and electrical energy, and it interacts with the plants, leaving some collapsing in patterns and some standing, defining those patterns, that energy interacting equally should leave carbon residue on the surface where it, the plants are up higher in these thick weaves, because the energy would interact with them, the hypothesis is, more intensely. We have never found carbon black as a residue like of cooking or heating the plants. And that says to W.C. Levengood that for the size of these formations, for the complexity and the change in depths, the fact that we don't find carbon black is significant and means rapidity of formation. And Lucy Pringle, who will be with us in the last half hour to talk about physical impacts on humans and animals, she has made that point as well, that she has concluded that the formations are happening rapidly. Remember, Winston Keach, at 1:44 a.m., there is nothing in the East Field. He thinks at 1:45 a.m. the first line appeared. That's quite rapid.
It's very rapid, yeah.
And now I want to move from my experience in Ogburn, of which I have put up a very long report with a lot of my images at earthfiles.com, so people can see through my eyes some of the structural anomalies and the amazing circles and the corridors, and the fact that Ogburn, St. George, was not even laid along the easy tram lines. It was rotated from the tram lines almost in what appeared to have been a north-south-east-west orientation when those 12 arms were put down. Probably, if not the most amazing formation in wheat in this 2009 summer, it is certainly up there as one of the top one, two, or three, and that is what we're calling the Quetzalcoatl headdress that was on the hill across the road from Silbury Hill. For those listening who have been to Silbury Hill, they know that when you're at the top, it's 130 feet above the ground. The largest man-made hill in Europe that is old and at least 5,000 years old.
Jeez, yeah.
Well, you think of the field across the road as being flat. It's not. That is a hill crop that rises up almost to the same altitude of Silbury Hill. And why is this significant? It means that whatever happened about this headdress, it happened on top of a hill that was opposite Silbury Hill's crest. And who was up there from 3 a.m. on? Cameraman Ryan O'Hara, with a documentary crew, has his camera, is looking all around. They knew there was nothing in that vicinity in the day before. And I'm going to now bring in the first eyes, first camera lens, who walked into this amazing, huge, complicated headdress, and that his first sighting of it and how it all began is his story here to tell on Coast. Here now is Ryan O'Hara about how it began and what happened.
Hi, yes.
Hi, Ryan.
Well, as you just read, that my production team was staked out on top of Silbury Hill the night that the formation, well, the morning the formation was found. And, well, my producer had the idea to check out Silbury Hill. We have been staking out different locations for the last couple weeks. We've been here for about 6 weeks now, and about three nights a week we will go out and cast it on top of a hill. In the early morning, we'll wait for the sun to come up and see if we can either catch any natural formations or people finishing their work. So we had a hunch. My producer had a hunch to go to Silbury Hill that night, and so we split up. Two people went to the West Kennet Longborough, the tomb that was there, did a yin-yang, and then two of us went to top of Silbury. And, well, we sat up there for a good hour and so, and then as the morning light kind of started to fill the sky, we were able to see further into the distance, and that is when I spotted with the camera and with my own eyes a small, very obscured pattern in the distance. And since the hill is so high across the street from Stillbury, the circle was not easily identifiable. It was more at a slant, even with your eye. So it was a very, prolonged disc. And so I radioed in across to my producer that we had found a new circle. And we waited for about half an hour, kind of waited around and to see if there's any activity anywhere. And when it was all calm and a little bit lighter, we decided to go inside the circle.
Now, Charles Mallett was impressed with how dew-laden everything was that morning.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us the very first, you're walking up to this for the very first time with your camera. Explain what you're seeing and talk about the lay and the complexity.
Right. Well, it's actually quite a good hike because they have to come down the hill across the street and go right up the same distance. But, when we first got into the circle, we kind of stayed on the outside. We found a nice tram line that led up to it finally. And we stood outside and we kind of just examined it for a while. We were giving ourselves a lot of time before we actually stepped into it because we knew once we stepped into it, then we would start leaving evidence of our being there. And so it was very exciting. And when we got to the top, is that something you could tell how big and complex it was? Like I said, from Silbury, it was very hard to tell because it's almost in the same eye line. So it was very foreshortened. Where here, we were actually... You could see further, being right upon it, and it was quite complex, and there was a lot of morning dew.
Well, you guys have been going around as a documentary crew into patterns. Can you give details now about what struck you? Was it? How different was it in terms of its pristineness and freshness to other formations you've been in?
Yes, it's customary that we will get into every formation that's reported the day of. We're not the first ones in, but we're pretty early. Now, this one was obviously much more pristine. After walking around it, the crop was very fresh. It was crunching. You know, we were actually stomping it to the ground, so we were doing the damage to the crop. It was very, very pristine, and there's only one spot in the entire thing that I would even take a question at if it was part of the design, but other than that, everything seemed to be pretty perfect. And what was really, I guess, impressive is that the design isn't just circles and things like that, where it actually has a very complex array of different geometric shapes, which makes it very, very complicated if it were to be done by man.
At the top of the headdress, everybody has talked about what appears to be facets. Some people have said maybe they are mountains. There's been all kinds of... Do you remember specifically getting to that very faceted area? No one's ever seen anything quite like that. And what did it look like close up on the ground?
Yeah, I think you're referencing the top, which is actually the part that was closest to the road from what I could see on top of Silbury, where it's pretty much wide open and has kind of like a pattern in the lay. Is that right? Yeah, well... obviously, it looked very nicely done. At the time, we had not seen an aerial, so we weren't quite sure what we were standing in. But we could tell that on the ground, we could tell that there was a different pattern in the lay, and it wasn't until later that we saw that it looked more part of a design and less part of the construct, I guess.
And is it fair to say that when the sun went down the day before on July 4th, there was nothing on top of that hill that anybody had reported. Airplanes fly over there. People are going by looking. So that here is an instance where you were there on Silbury at 3 a.m. If there had been lights over on that hill, you probably would have noticed something.
Yeah, that's very true. It seems that there are so many people who fly around here, especially a giant tourist area like Silbury, where people climb it every day during the day. And people seem to report crop circles pretty fast around here, and there was absolutely no record of that being there the night before, nor did we know that there is going to be anything there. We just some luck, I guess. But, yes, I can tell you that the amazing thing that our stakeout does, although we did not see any humans or extra phenomenal activity, what we did do is manage to make a nice time scale that we were there from 3 and we saw nothing, no lights. We witnessed every car go by, none of them stopped, things like that. So what our production did do is really make a fantastic time slot that makes it very improbable to be to be done by man, or a very, or must have been a very talented team that with phenomenal that skills. Because yeah, 3 a.m, no activity.
And that the complexity and size of that formation is something that would have taken a great deal of time if anybody could have done it. And what we are underscoring in this COAST program is that we are dealing with phenomena, and we are dealing with pristineness in which there has been so much rain and so much mud. And yet, Ogborne, the new formations this morning, I just saw fresh images, there's no mud. And that morning, how clean would you say? What are you looking at in terms of cleanliness?
Yeah, we've been in a couple of formations the day of, and we've seen lots of mud work, and we've been very, distraught about that. But in this one, we definitely took very much care to examine when we first got in it to see if there were any signs of things like that. And there's absolutely, to my knowledge, no mud on top of the plants. It was all very fresh.
So, George, we're talking about, as everybody who has looked at that amazing Quetzalcoatl headdress, the complexity of it is enormous. There are features in there that we have not seen in other formations, just like that tight, tight weave in the East Field. Whatever is happening, it appears to be working with crops in ways that no one in a human way has ever been able to demonstrate.
What do you got in store for us next half hour,
Linda? Next in the half hour is Lucy Pringle, incredible aerial photographer and researcher in crop formations, with what happens to people in these patterns.
Good point. Linda, isn't this incredible how it is all gearing up toward 2012? These symbols, they're everywhere, huh?
George, are you live now?
No, I passed on a few weeks ago.
Well, there was some strange dropout. It might have been in the signal. I know we're
Could
now
be.
Back into this half hour.
Could
and
be.
You just, would you ask what you just asked again?
Sure. I was saying, isn't it strange how this is all gearing itself towards 2012?
Well, if you go back to the end of the, in the 70s and the 80s, there were crop formations, but they were nothing like what's called the modern age since probably 90. And that, so we're talking about a long run-up. If the crop formations have anything directly linked to 2012 as some sort of historic demarcation line that may simply be the end of a calendar that may have relevance to the Earth now or may not, none of us really know. My own personal opinion is that the crop formations are providing something out there with information, but to what end? That's what we would all like to know. And I have fresh report right now from Andrew Perka, who has run back from the Waden Hill brand new formation this morning, seen on the way to Dew Coast. Here is Andrew again.
Yes, hi, George.
Welcome back, Andrew.
We got there. We did manage to get some ground shots of the new formation, but literally about 15 minutes or so later, the farmer turned up and started cutting a whole formation out. It's really sad, but well, there you go. What can you do? It's the farmer's land. It's his property, and I suppose he can do what he wants. But
what did you say?
Well, basically, the actual formation itself was a kind of a round circle with two circles inside at the same time, and almost like a big teardrop going into the center of the two circles. It was quite an interesting one. But again, it was very difficult to actually give a full assumption from ground level. So we hope we can sort of reconstruct it from the photographs we have. So basically, it was kind of a exciting morning, but a sad morning at the same time.
Well, I have a question. Since it rained so hard yesterday and it's been mud, there was mud out in front. You've got it on your pants. What you were able to see of the crop before the farmer came and cut it out, can you give a description about whether you saw mud, anything? How pristine was it?
Now, the formation itself was absolutely pristine. What I used to sort of describe when you actually walk on freshly flattened corn, it has that crispiness to it. And there was no mud deposits whatsoever. It was just beautifully laid. You could just see the actual wheat was still slightly rising, So that's a good indication that it's not been flattened by anybody. But so it's yeah, no mud deposit at all, considering the weather conditions.
And they're going to head off, I think, to the Hackson Hill, and I'll be doing reports at earthfiles.com about these brand new formations and whatever else is going to be turning up. I will continue to try to keep filing reports, but there is another very important aspect to crop formations, and there is one woman in England who has probably done more work than anybody else when it comes to the impacts of some kind of energy that is residual in the formations on people and sometimes even animals. I've known Lucy Pringle for a long time. She is based in Hampshire County, England, and she has been photographing crop formations from the air and on the ground since 1993, and her aerial images are some of the best in the world. And you can see her work at her website, www.lucypringle.co.uk. She has also produced valuable and beautiful books about her crop formation research. I have them all. Crop Circles, Art in the Landscape was released in 2007 after her two previous books, Crop Circles in 2004, and Crop Circles, The Greatest Mystery of Modern Times in 1999. She has been one of the few people to investigate reports of both good and bad physical effects on people in crop formations, as well as the disturbed behavior of dogs in and around crop formations. One possible background context leading up to Lucy's own comments is that biophysicist W.C. Lovingood in the United States hypothesized back in the mid-1990s from his studies of biophysical and biochemical changes in crop formations, not only the plants but the soils, that a spinning plasma vortex containing microwave and electrical energies is what interacts with the cereal crops of the world to create these remarkable patterns. Spinning plasmas could also affect the magnetic fields in crop formations, maybe even for a day or two or three. And that might explain, he has said, the range of physical effects noticed by people and in animals. And I'm going to ask Lucy to share with the Coast audience now what were either the single case or the cases that first attracted your own attention that something is interacting with people and even animals. And here now is Lucy Pringle.
Great.
Hello, George.
Hi, Lucy. Good.
I suppose my very first experience was something that happened to me. And this was a long time ago in 1990. And I'd been playing quite a vicious game of mixed doubles tennis. And I'd been standing at the net, and somebody's hit a very hard ball at me. And that damaged my shoulders to such an extent that that evening I couldn't even lift my arm in order to clean my teeth. And this was a great worry to me because I was going to have my very, very first flight over the circles the following day. And I wasn't certain that I'd be able to drive down. Anyhow, I got a gear shift car. And so my good hand was able to shift the gears. And I just steered very gently with my right arm. And we got in the air and flew over these amazing formations in 1990, which was the year of the first pictograms, the enormous great linear pictograms. And, of course, you know, flying over the fields, it's a remarkable experience. Mm-hmm. And you forget all your ills and your woes and anything like that. And it wasn't until I was driving back that I realized I was in quite a lot of trouble. So we stopped at a formation at Morstead. And we went in and I used my pendulum to douse for the place where there was the strongest energy. Then I sat down. And suddenly a most extraordinary rippling sensation went right through one shoulder to the other. And I thought, well, you know, this is strange. What could be happening? And I fiddled with my arm, my damaged arm, and it was totally cured, totally healed. And so I called for a friend of mine who was with me, and she had an illness called systemic scleroderma, which is a chronic illness. And I said to him, come and sit here. I didn't tell her what had happened to me, but I just said, come and sit here. This is a good spot. So she sat down, and the moment she sat down, she said, oh, my goodness, I feel wonderful. I'd love to stay here forever. Well, I had to douse and measure up and things, so I went away, came back about 20 minutes later, and there she was lying flat on her back. And she said, look at me. And I said, yes, well, so what? And she said, Lucy, don't you realize I have not been able to lie flat on my back for 15 years.
My God.
Due to this illness, she has to prop herself up in bed. So this was just the, one of the instances. On my database, I've got over 700 reports. I think it's the largest database in the world. And I was trying to select one or two for you today. And to try and rustle through the 700 is amazing. But I have got one or two examples.
Okay. And are those ley line areas, Lucy, do you know?
Yes, I mean, they all genuine crop circles seem to be on energy lines, ley lines.
Okay.
And I think this is part of the whole phenomenon, just as 98.3% are all on chalk land. And indeed, in the States, you have about the same percentage on limestone, which has the same properties as chalk, because, you know, it's porous and the aquifers underneath. And we seem to think that the descending electrical force in some way interacts with the electromagnetic fields emitted by the energy lines and the aquifers underneath the ground. An awful lot is going on underneath the ground, which we can't see and we don't really understand.
Okay. Linda?
Linda. Yeah, George.
There you go.
Yes. And what we are now going to do is Lucy's going to go into a couple of cases. And before she does, I just wanted to share personally that I had an experience in a, it was a remarkable pattern back in 1992, 1993 time period. And there were only four of us that the farmer gave permission, specific permission to go in and sample. All four of us entered the field at exactly the same time. Two were male, two female. We were all doing various chores over 4 to 5 hours because we were in with the farmer's permission and we did a lot of work. And suddenly, at about 4 hours into that formation, all of us at exactly the same time said, oh, my head hurts so badly that I feel like I have to sit down. And we all began realizing that something was happening that we didn't understand, but that we all had these symptoms. Now, are those headaches that people have experienced in crop formations, is it related to magnetic field disturbance? This is probably one, Lucy, of the most common symptoms, sure. And I'm now going to turn to you of what I just said about headaches.
Yes, headaches is a very common symptom. In my research, I've had a list of the various effects like cranial headaches and ocular vision changes, hallucinations, etc. And it's I have to say that over 70% actually are negative reports. But that isn't surprising because when people go into a formation, they expect to feel well. And so they don't necessarily report that feeling of well-being unless it's quite outstanding. But they will report to me if they don't feel well. But I got a strange report. This was an ocular effect. A man was going into a formation at Alton Barnes. And as he neared the formation, his vision split into two, one going one way, the other horizontally, one going one way, the other going the other way. But he was clear in the middle. And that was really quite scary. I mean, the vision was totally clear in the middle. He doesn't wear spectacles, and normally he has normal vision. And he didn't see any change in the colors, and it hasn't happened to him since. But then there was another example of somebody who went into another formation, and it was quite scary in a way because she suddenly saw everything in black and white. The color had completely gone, and this lasted for 30 seconds. And when something like that happens, 30 seconds is a long time. And Oh, there are so many reports, George. The reports of people feeling ill when they look at formations, and a lot of them are shaped like mandalas. And mandalas give off certain frequencies. And even people watching slideshows, they can feel quite ill. There was one occasion in the States when I was giving a talk, and a girl came up to me, and she was in quite a bad mood. And she said to me, "Lucy, you're late starting." Well, I wasn't really, but I said, "Well, you know, I hope you get everything you want from this talk." And afterwards, she came up to me, and she was an entirely changed person. And she said, "Oh, I was so sorry, I was so rude to you." But she said, "I've had a terrible pain in my knee for years." And she said, "It just was so extraordinary, because in the middle of your talk, I suddenly realized the pain had gone." Well, unfortunately, I haven't been able to follow that up. So I don't know whether that was permanent, but there seems to be what they're dealing with basically is frequencies.
Sure.
And even animals, as animals get affected. Usually, funny enough, it's usually cats. And a friend of mine called Doreen Jenkins, she went into a formation and she brought some wheat home, and she put it in the loo, in the lavatory. And her cat went to it, and he guarded it. And this is a normally docile, sweet cat. And the moment she went up to it and tried to touch the wheat, it growled and it snarled at her. And it did this for about 3 days. She couldn't get near it. And she said she didn't know, but maybe she thought the cat could see what was happening in her own aura and maybe was protecting her from it. It was most extraordinary. Hold on, I'll get back to Linda.
Okay.
One of the things that Lucy just said, frequencies, and we know also that batteries in cameras have notoriously failed inside some crop formations now for 20-some years. All of this adding up to in the unseen, in the frequency world, and in what biophysicist W.C. Levengood has talked about, spinning plasmas that could affect magnetic fields, that this seems to be a huge part of what crop formations are doing in the environment, with the answer why still unanswered. But I would like now to ask Lucy a question that has been bothering me ever since I was getting ready to leave Albuquerque, and I begin receiving all of these internet messages, and one of them had very large letters that began with 100%, 100% of all 2009 English crop formations are man-made. And I looked at that thinking of either the ignorance behind it or the deliberate misinformation in order to manipulate the public and the media's mind for some reason that is not understood. And Lucy has been living amid this phenomena and studying it and going into the field for a very long time in England. And I would like Lucy to comment on these internet so-called headlines of 100% man-made.
Yes, George. It's very frustrating because I've been doing research now in the fields for about 20 years.
That's a long time.
Bottles of water, and they are tested all over the world using different techniques, and they show up extraordinary anomalies. And in one particular formation, I took seeds from inside and outside. They were measured for protein levels, and it showed up a 40% higher protein level in the ones taken inside. They were measured blind. So when people say, come up with these extraordinary figures of 80% are man-made and 20% aren't, I get quite hot under the collar, because my belief is, taking it from a scientific point of view, in order to make a statement like that, you've either got to have been into every single one of the crop circles yourself, or you've got to be there when they appeared, or you've got to conducted scientific tests in every single one of them, or you have got to know for a fact that maybe the National Geographic or Mitsubishi or somebody has actually commissioned a particular formation. And there is not one single person on earth who can fit that criteria. So it's a totally, totally unscientific statement, and it doesn't do the phenomenon any good, nor does it do the people any good who come out with these statements.
Okay.
And I couldn't reinforce that more, George, and to realize that we are at a time where these modern formations have been occurring for at least 20-some years, and that what we have gone through in these 2 hours today on the radio program separates out in infrared anomalies, separates out timelines in which a formation could not have been made, that there is a true phenomenon here, and maybe there is someone or political entities that for some reason want to manipulate the public and the media mind to ignore what it seems to be a major phenomenon. But I am trying in my own way to report the facts, and the facts speak for themselves. Everything from the infrared to the biophysical and biochemical studies, Lucy's important work, and that we are dealing with energy systems and frequencies that are involved and leave residues. And what we would all like to know is exactly why. But you don't ignore something because you don't understand it.
Are you ready for Conversations with Linda?
I am.
We will do that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, didn't Whitley Strieber say that when he was in a crop formation, he got sick, he didn't feel well?
Right. It was one in Texas about 10 years or 12 years ago, and he told me about it. And there are probably more physical bad effects in crop formations than joy and a kind of elation. I've felt them both. And when you talk with somebody in the medical community or a biophysicist like W.C. Levengood and you say, why would there suddenly be headaches or nausea or dizziness and the batteries in cameras that suddenly fail and people can literally take their camera from inside of a crop formation where it's not functioning, they walk out, and right outside of the formation, the camera will work. They can walk into the formation, the camera will not work. So it's very specific to the pattern. And the biophysicist answer is that if you have a spinning plasma which are ions, it can interact with magnetic fields. And we know that we're subject to magnetic fields as creatures living on the surface of this earth because we don't see them. Often people do not realize that there could be a cause and effect between magnetic disturbance right in and around the crop formation and impact on health. It doesn't mean that there is a negative intent of the crop formation. It means that the physical evidence of magnetic field anomalies and perhaps these other energy residues interact with us as life forms, and it again reinforces this is hard physical evidence that has been associated with crop formations now for more than two decades that has absolutely nothing to do with boards and string. It has to do with impacts in the magnetic field.
What do you think about the possibility that this planet is alive, it has consciousness, and this is its way of trying to communicate with us?
It doesn't ring over all of the years. I think we are dealing with profound intelligence, and it is such a good question, George, that you're raising source, because now in July of 2009, about to go into August, it's very clear that all of the public now is being exposed to discussions about time travelers, other dimensions, that we are beginning to expand our view of the playing board here. It doesn't have to be simply extraterrestrial biological entities from a solar system somewhere in this galaxy or another. That used to be the only interpretation. Now I think Wynne Keach's infrared, it is so anomalous, and you have looked at that one, which is just such a short piece of hours
of his video, mm-hmm. and that to know that it's infrared. And would you say, George, you should give me your reaction upon seeing that video for the first time?
Well, it was weird. I mean, you saw the burst of light, and then the creatures, like you said, little legs.
Right.
And then it kind of like disappeared, or it kind of, you know, morphed itself back into the background. But it was strange.
And the dissipation, I don't know what other verb to use. It is almost as if it evaporates in the air.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, speaking of getting sick, I've got tomorrow, my first hour guest is Benjamin Krem, and he's the representative for the Maitreya, whom some people say is the Antichrist. When he was on with me a few years ago, Linda, people got sick, physically sick now, when he was talking.
For heaven's sake.
I mean, I was getting messages from people who were getting nauseous and everything.
Why are you having him on?
I don't know. I want to see if it's real or not, I guess.
Well, we do know what you've just said underscores that we are on an earth that we're used to looking at XYZ axis and seeing with our eyes. It is so underscored when you come to the crop formation phenomenon. That what we see with our eyes, invisible light, is such a tiny fraction of what is actually happening. And when you begin to study the wide range of infrared, I have had a discussion with a producer of infrared equipment for the Defense Department. And he was telling me that depending upon the very specific range of frequencies that the DOD wants, that they may have to make a special camera. You cannot just go and buy a camera that shows you all the ranges in infrared. It doesn't work that way. And DOD may have a dozen infrared cameras. Imagine what is happening at frequencies that we are never seeing, but that can be around us at all times. And that video that I sent to Lex to put up from Winston, and I have a series at Earth Files, shows and underscores that infrared was capturing very bright, intense heat associated with that light, and something that, as you yourself, it looks like it has legs.
Yeah.
And that it moves forward. There's definitely a forward motion and then the dissipation, and you're left with that feeling that is still somewhere out in Knapp Hill and East Field.
Is everybody still in the room there with you, or have they all departed?
Andrew and Paul have gone to see if they can get into Hackpen Hill while it's fresh. We are racing to formations because the farmers this year are hugely aggressive.
I don't blame them.
In a way.
This is their livelihood. They make money on their crops, and you know, if they're getting knocked down by whatever source, I mean, I'm sure they're upset.
But Lucy has left to meet the farmer who has been so angry at Ogborn. When Jill and I went in, we did not know the farmer was angry. We knew nothing. We went and we followed protocol. You stay on the tram lines. You go into the pattern. Well, Lucy called the farmer. She knew who he was, and she said, I wanted to do my water experiments. Would you let me in? So she's taken off to go with the farmer who was angry, and he's going to let her bury bottles. He's not going to take Ogburn, that's the 12-arm, down.
She's pretty bold. She's bold, huh?
Well, he's now cooperating with Lucy, and that's one of the values of some of us who have some long-term relationships with people. And in her case, they understand she is trying to do some scientific work. So he's going to cooperate with her. And then we are all, the whole group from this morning, we're going to meet at a White Horse Inn and have a late lunch. And we'll catch up on what Lucy's experience was, on Andrew and Paul out at Hackpen Hill, the camera crew on the documentary, Charles Mallett. We're all going to have lunch. So it will be a very interesting discussion.
Well, you thank them for being on the program.
I will.
And we'll go to calls. And, of course, my little pun of the night, if Lucy gets beamed aboard a craft, I guess you could say she's Lucy in the sky?
I'll tell her at lunch.
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
The Beatles would love that.
Hello, Andy, east of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, Linda. Hi, this is Andy from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Sure thing.
Hi.
Yes, in Gordon Michael Scallion's book, Notes from the Cosmos, he goes into great detail who the crop circle makers are. He calls them the Aetherians, and they are actually people who exist in the fifth realm of Earth's of the Earth, actually, a shadow Earth, and that they operate or they work in conjunction with the Pleiadians to create these spheres out of material from the atmosphere using microwave energy and plasma.
Andy,
so that's
yes. The one thing about Mr. Scallion is that there have been all kinds of perceptions over the years that have not panned out, and you have to say that this is his speculation. There's a huge range of speculation about what is behind the phenomenon, but is there a single human on Earth that actually knows? I don't think so. I think that the very fact that the phenomena that some of us have encountered in the dark and in the sun that seems to have a palpable feeling, a profound intelligence to it, is something that might be unknowable to human life in the way we would like to sit down over coffee with extraterrestrials, time travelers, other dimensional beings and say, please teach us, tell us about your experiences and where you come from. I think we are dealing with phenomena that cannot do that, and that the crop formations themselves might be just a residue of technologies that are being used, let's say, to gauge efforts to affect timelines. We are left in awe, and they know that. And there's no question that the intelligence behind formations interacts with the human minds, sometimes seems to even play in a kind of playful way. And that, in and of itself, we try to anthropomorphize from a human mind looking at humans. But my experience with what I have encountered over the last 20 years is it is an energy and an intelligence that I do not think has anything to do with the Earth and humans as we are living now. Where it comes from and why, that's the intriguing question. And if, as has been suggested by many people at different times in the phenomena, that we might actually be dealing with time travelers, that moves this into another level of a 3-6 level chess game that is really, truly beyond our comprehension until something forces the hand of something that might be in the future coming back and using genetic material, using the surface life of the Earth for an unimaginable challenge in the future where perhaps life is not guaranteed. And that has always been a sense that those of us who have been here for many years off and on, there always was that sense in the first formations I went into that I was dealing with something that had to do with survival, our survival, its survival, and that's what is really unclear. What kind of future may we be headed into, and is something trying to change timelines? I find that fascinating to contemplate, but George, would you not agree that that is one of the most difficult subjects because we are so used to living in an XYZ matter world?
Absolutely. Allentown, Pennsylvania, we go. Laura, it's your turn.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I like what you just said, Linda, about something trying to change our timeline, possibly. But I wanted to ask you this. I read somewhere a couple of years ago that there was a crop circle, and it said that it was in the shape of a famous cartoon pig, but it didn't identify, you know, which famous cartoon pig it was. And
well,
that
sounds like one of the hoaxer's jokes.
Well, I don't. It was a serious article. It was a very serious article, and I was just wondering, you know, if it were true, the only cartoon pig that I could think of is Porky, and he's famous for saying that's all, folks. And I had also read, or actually seen a picture. Yeah, I don't need to get too spooky here, but I had also seen a picture of another crop circle that showed the solar system, and it instead of having a circle where Earth should be, it was just an empty orbit.
Right. And that was, without doubt, one of the most sobering formations of all time. I can remember a phone conversation with a colleague in England when that solar system came, and we are all staring at what should have been the third ring with a planet while all the other planets were there, and that third ring was empty.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody's – you can then jump from the pattern itself and say something is trying to tell us that perhaps the Earth is headed towards some kind of a disaster. It can also be – and this is where I always hold – a space in my mind that we should not always be doom and gloom and catastrophe, that if we are dealing with forces that may actually be trying to survive themselves, our survival may be intimate to theirs. And if they are profoundly intelligent, that maybe what is occurring, we may never precisely know that something succeeded. And the Earth will continue to keep evolving. The sun will rise and fall. There will be meteorite strikes, and perhaps we will finally have governments who will level with us that we're not alone in the universe and that there are other life forms, and that the Earth will have a future that is more honest and straightforward than it has certainly been for the last 5,000 years of all kinds of manipulation. If not, if there is catastrophe and destruction in our future, it would seem to me to signal that something failed in the efforts of that intelligence. And I would like to think that the beauty and the precision and the mystery of the truly great formations always give me hope that there is something out there that is our ally, that living life has a serious ally, from the highest force to intelligences that may have their own stake in survival, and that they are working on our behalf and their behalf. And as long as you hold that space, you can't see any of this as catastrophic and negative.
Why do they create these symbols, Linda? Why not just spell it out there for us?
Well, this has been a very significant 12-month period from July of 2008 when Mike Reed, the retired physicist from Arizona State University, recognized pi to 9 digits in Barbary Castle again, and how it was defined by horizontal flat lines with very specific ratchets, and that began an arc, you might say, into the 2009 season when Mike Reed and the Australian physicist who request anonymity, they began realizing that from April 14th on, with the very first oilseed rape pattern at the Ridgeway near Avebury, that they were beginning to see patterns that all seemed to focus on lunar and solar cycles, not interpretive. This was quite specific. And that by July, that fifth to seventh period, when they had been seeing the sevens, the July, the lunar, solar, and for 2 months at Earth Files, I had been reporting what they as scientists were seeing in patterns developing up to what they thought would be a solar flare from our sun that has been abnormally quiet for 3 years, that there would be on July 7th a release of energy that might be a coronal mass ejection. Why and all of that? They said maybe something is trying to teach us to see the crop formations as a place where there can be communication about our Earth and our solar system. And what happened? We get to July 5th. To July 7, and here come these two enormous sunspots out of a completely naked, quiet sun, each sunspot the diameter of the Earth, two Earths making up a sunspot twin, and within those 48 hours between July 5th and July 7th, those two sunspots had grown to sunspots the size of Jupiter on the sun. It's sunspot 1024. And when 1024 went around the limb of the sun orbiting, it was so strong that it will come back around this time.
We'll be back with final phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, when do you come back to the States?
The 11th of August, and I'm going to be able to see the Australian scientist here this coming week. He's coming from Australia, and he's going to stay long enough to get through August 15th, because this goes back quite a ways, maybe 5 years ago, 3 years ago, that he saw in the crop formations this issue of why certain patterns and where they are in latitude and longitudes and orientations on the horizon and all of that. In fact, all of what I'm saying right now was at Earth Files at least 3 years ago. About August 9th, 2009, or thereabouts, days on either side of the ninth, might be an event. Now, what it would be, none of us know, but there has been quite a gathering of people because of this sense that maybe something really significant is going to happen in August of 2009. Well, I'll be here at least to the 11th, and you're fighting the ability to get out of Europe in August. That's what forced that day on me. You can't always get flights when you want them. So I'll be back August 11th. He's going to stay longer. I'll get back and stay in touch with him, and I'll be reporting at Earth Files. And in my next coast, what happened in August in Wiltshire?
Can you believe we're going into August already?
I know. It is the fastest year I think I've ever experienced.
Yeah. It is. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Carmel, Indiana. Barbara, east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, it's nice to speak with you both.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, and I'm ill. I have fibromyalgia.
Okay.
Excuse me, I'm nervous. And I was just wondering, since Linda does have some experiments on being healed, I was just wondering if I could be a part of that sometime.
Oh, Lucy Pringle, the woman I was interviewing in the last half hour of interviews,
She
has purposefully done research here. I've been out in the fields when she has been experimenting with medical people and people in crops. So it is Lucy Pringle who has done the most investigation that I know of the impact of crop formations on people. I have worked with a biophysicist on the changes in soil and plants. They are kind of flip sides of the same coin. Whatever is affecting the plants and the soil is probably what is causing the effects in people. And Lucy was suggesting that there have been spontaneous healings in crop formations. They've been reported periodically over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why some people react in the presence of certain energy fields with a change in their nervous system or their muscles or whatever it is, that's part of the mystery. I'm sorry to hear that you have fibromyalgia, which I understand affects muscles.
Yes.
And if we had the ability to say you could go to X town and X field and there would be a formation with the right energy for you to go into, wouldn't it be wonderful? But it doesn't happen that way. Crop formations with the intense energy, the intense energy only lasts even measurably for about, at the most, 72 hours.
Uh-huh.
So you would have to be where the crop formation occurs. I've been in hundreds,
mm-hmm.
and I have felt the kind of exhilaration that you just feel like you are united somehow with the force of life itself. Those are the formations that people hear about the most, and they come when they come, and if you're lucky enough to be in them, you might have this restorative, rejuvenating experience. Unfortunately, we can't control it.
You can't say when your next one is?
No, nobody knows. They just come by whatever is the force that produces them, and most of them are in England. But I think it's important in the context of these 3 hours to also stress crop formations in 1990, for example, and 91. They were being reported in 23 countries around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Complex crop formations were reported in wet rice paddies in Japan. They have been found in grassy plains in Australia. So we're talking about a phenomenon that affects both hemispheres, has for a very long time, covers the world. And Doug and Dave and the so-called hoaxers now, they are not flying around the world in jets making crop formations.
Okay, next up we go to Santa Barbara, California, west of the Rockies. Pasquale. Hi there.
Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Linda, I've been looking forward to talking to you for years. I've heard you so many times. Thanks for all the great work that you're doing.
I really thank you for appreciating it.
I was born in Philadelphia, and every year I go back to visit my parents. And one year, I'm a Buddhist, and I go to this Philadelphia Buddhist group. I think they were sitting at Haverford College, and after the meeting, two people there were talking, and they were talking about a crop circle that was on a farm near where they were living. I think it took us about an hour or so to drive up there, and the moon was out, and they let me walk ahead, and it was pretty visible. It wasn't real dark. I don't know if it was a full moon, but I'm walking up over this hill. The crop circle that they said was already there was probably 100 yards. And then all of a sudden, there was this wind started moving, and it got brighter. And I heard this humming sound, and the grain, I can't remember if it was wheat or what, it started moving. And I looked up, and there was this ship about 40 to 50 feet up, which became what I believe was partially visible, and it disappeared in about 3 or 4 seconds, and it was a very unpleasant feeling. And the crop circle started forming. I was hoping they would have turned it off because I got pretty scared. But it started moving in a clockwise manner, and it went down in, I think, less than a minute. And I looked pretty close. It was a pretty strong energy, and there was also an odor, but it's been so long, I can't remember the odor, but I remembered us remarking there was an odor that lasted for 3 or 4 minutes.
What were you seeing in the sky above where the formation formed?
Well, I remember real clearly that it was about 40 to 50 feet or closer. It wasn't far, but it was almost like a parallelogram. It looked like metal. And I don't think I saw the whole thing, but it came into vision, and then it dissolved. I looked up there because I think the humming came from there. And the wind was what got me first. The wind started moving first.
And that has been reported in so many cases in the UFO literature of air or trees moving without wind in some cases, and a big silver disc has appeared that would explain why the trees would be thrashing around, but it sounds to me like you may be one of the few eyewitnesses who has ever seen what appeared to be something. Was it disc-shaped?
What I saw was not disc-shaped, but I don't think I saw the whole craft.
When you said parallelogram, you meant it was sort of rectangular?
It was kind of the part that I saw was almost like what I took to be like a bay that could open, like two doors that would open,
right,
and a protrusion on the bottom, and I saw that real clearly. But I'd say, honestly speaking, the thing was in the sky for about 5 seconds, and I don't think it took off. I think it just dissolved somehow from our field of vision.
Right. This whole issue of dissipation, is it because there is a technology that can deflect photons or do something in which that is still there, the entity at Nap Hill that seems to dissipate on that infrared, where is the dissipation going? Is it dissipating into another infrared frequency that even that camera was not prepared to see? Is the craft itself deflecting photons from your eyes, reaching your eyes by a technology that then it seems to disappear? Those are the important questions I wish I had absolute answers to, but this dissipation dissolving phenomenon is so common, and it sounds like you're making a direct association with the appearance of the aerial object and a very sudden swirling of, was it wheat, was it grass?
And Linda, also let me ask you, we got to take some more calls before.
Okay, this is fascinating. I hope you will email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com, and I'll follow up with you more.
Have you ever run across Ed Grimsley?
He is the fellow
with the night vision goggles
in Oregon or someplace, and he's working in Starscope, which is image enhancement, not infrared.
Yep, and he's got these third generation night vision goggles, and I looked through them one night and saw two strange UFOs, who knows what they were, darting all over the place. Truly unbelievable.
And that's the Starscope enhancement, is where starlight is being used to basically brighten the dark so you can see them.
Next up, we go to Anaheim, California. Hello, Billy. You're up with us.
Hello, George.
Hi.
And Linda, listen, those arms that you see in that circle, those are the 12 arms of Jacob. They are finished. They have picked up their people. They have cleaned them up. They have them ready. And you wait and see in about, well, maybe in a week or so, you're going to see people disappearing out of this earth. They're going to pick up their own. And then this earth, is going to, they're going to have all kinds of turmoil. And it's going to start here in California. George, I was going to tell you, you know that the UFO they saw over Chicago, O'Hara?
Yeah, the one that looked like it went through the donut of the cloud.
They were following a nuclear suitcase nuke. The people got off at Chicago, and they sit up there and waited to see what plane they took, and they're following those nukes. They're not going to let those nukes get they're not going to let them blow up anybody.
No, I don't think they had any, but hey, thanks, Billy, for the call. Michael in Miami, Florida? You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi, Michael.
How you doing, George? How are you? Hi,
good.
Linda.
Hi.
How are you guys? Linda, you have touched so many subjects that I'm right now I just don't know what to speak about. but I can honestly tell you that I've seen them. I've seen them from a distance. I've seen them up close.
Which? What have you seen?
I've seen what they call the grays.
With the big black slanted eyes.
Yes, I've seen them. I've seen their craft, but it was nighttime, so all I can see was, like, the lights.
They aren't the only game in town, but what is your interaction with them?
Ever since, like, my first encounter, I've never cared about being so curious about that. As far as I'm concerned, God made the universe, and we're all in it. We shouldn't allow them to take up so much of our time and energy. Obviously, they care about this planet, and they have technologies beyond our understanding.
Right.
I strongly believe that the oil is the Earth's blood. It's been so fast, and everything on Earth requires lubrication. I mean, why wouldn't the Earth require lubrication? It's spinning so fast. It keeps it cool.
I think you're right about that. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have theorized that as we take more and more oil out of the Earth, that's why we get more earthquakes, Linda.
Yeah, well, that is just sheer physics.
Yep.
You can't displace volume in rock and soil without it then being unstable. And the more oil we've taken out, there's no question we've caused a seismic event.
The feelings that you have when you're in the middle of a crop formation, do you feel this energy there?
Oh, absolutely. It's palpable. It's extraordinary and in many ways unique. It's almost like a kind of physical tingling or buzz. It is. You can enter crop formations, and from stepping your first step in, you feel an energy that is not, you can step out of it. I've done that. You can step into it and step out of it, which would explain why people can step into a crop formation, their batteries and their cameras fail, they walk out, everything works. And they have done this where they walk in and out, just curious about how specific, how formation specific. So the energy that I feel and that others feel and that affects equipment and animals and people and so forth, it is either a residue from what made the formation, or it is deliberately energy that is there for some reason for some period of time. And when you're in that energy, that is the exhilarating one, it affects you for hours and days. You are moved into a space of the most positive well-being, and you think, if the whole world could experience this, so much of the war and fighting and the negativity would just go away. And that is, to me, one of the most positive aspects of crop formations. Those of us who have come so many times to study and be in them, we know that that is one of the residues of being around crop formations. It can be so highly positive and, in a way, changes you probably forever. And from my point of view, it's all been positive.
Okay, let's go to Vancouver, British Columbia. Ryan, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Linda. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Sure.
George, it was great to meet you when you came up here.
Absolutely. I had a great time. I think we're going to do it again next year, too.
Fantastic. It'll be great to have you back. I just wanted to, I guess, comment on the proton deflection that Linda was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And
a photon.
Photon, sorry.
Photon, not proton. Photon.
And my own experiences, my own sightings, it really seems to depend on the angle at which you're looking at it, just like the two fellows that were talking in the photos that were on online as to how you can see it and you know, what perception that you have on it.
Well, and the interesting thing is, why would Paul's mind and eye and retina have continued to function absolutely uninterrupted? He was able to videotape all of this. He was able to see it. And yet Andrew is suddenly blanked from seeing a craft to which he is the very closest. Was it a protection move on the part of the craft to disappear from him so that he would not get in harm's way in relationship to the craft? He was very close. And that is one of the questions we can't answer. Or was there another reason to basically demonstrate that the intelligence or whatever was in this silver thing knew that Paul was videotaping everything? And it was Andrew who is free moving. Maybe the intelligence decided, well, here is a very good opportunity to show that the videotape will show us, but the human walking around in the field cannot see us because we have deliberately deflected the photons from our craft so they will not reach his retina. That is one of the clearest physical demonstrations that I know of that has record behind it in the videotape.
Travel safe, Linda. Linda Moulton Howe, live for us in the United Kingdom. She's not too far from CERN in Switzerland, which is supposed to go online in a few more months. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lautasour, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.